We start with the underlying philosophy that everything he has done, we must do. Because if I try to go simply do what Jesus did, then I'm going to create mini-me's of me that are lopsided and are not holistic. And so we create understanding that the old African proverb that says that if it takes a village to raise a child, it takes a church to raise a Christian.
Hi, and welcome to today's episode of The Exchange. My name is Micah Fries. We're glad you're here. The Exchange is a place where we engage in truth, thoughts, and theology, hoping to compel one another to love and good deeds. On today's show, Ed had the opportunity to sit down with Tahati Lewis at a national gathering of church leaders. Now, Tahati's the founding and lead pastor of Blueprint Church in Atlanta. He's the president of the Rebuild Network, where he seeks to see more churches planted in the urban context. He has a master's degree from Dallas Theological Seminary. He's a church planner. He's a collegiate pastor. In my opinion, he's one of the best disciplers in the country today. He's a phenomenal thinker and leader. I think you're really going to learn a lot from him. Now, as we get started, remember, you can engage with us on social media using the hashtag TheExchange so that we know you're in the conversation. Here on The Exchange, helping to develop our leadership skills is a common theme. In this Ministry Grid training session, Brad Lominick is going to describe for us an authentic leader.
Let's talk about being authentic as a leader. Here are 12 points on the importance and the practice of being authentic. Authenticity rules. So here's some best practices that I've found helpful. Number one, be real in all mediums. The digital age makes it easy to be inauthentic. Although we're always on, ultimately, we can create a fake persona behind a profile on Facebook or on Twitter. It's easy to live a secondary life and feel like we're someone we aren't. We have to be authentic across the board. Number two, constantly turn the rocks over in your life and in your leadership. Uncover the areas that need to be made clean. Big things are at stake. It's exhausting, ultimately, to not actually be the real you. It's way easier and less work to be who you really are. Number three, the more successful you become, the less accessible you are. It's reality. More people clamor for your time with you, but it's not possible to be available to everyone. Be wise and discerning, but also open to helping where you can. As Andy Stanley says, do for one what you wish you could do for many. Number four, learn to open up. You can impress people way easier from a distance, so many leaders keep others at arm's length. For example, we often prefer digital interaction to life-on-life exchanges. This insulates us and prevents others from uncovering our weaknesses and our flaws, but it also reduces our ability to influence others. Number five, ask great questions. Great leaders that I know solve problems and create solutions through the questions they ask. Questions many times reflect your values. Number six, invite direct reports to do a 360-degree review of you on a regular basis. It's incredibly uncomfortable, but it's also really helpful. And as Rick Warren has said, you can't love people and influence them unless you are close to them. Up close means you get to see my warts. Number seven, accept a better standard. The goal of every Christian is ultimately to become more like Christ. But often our standard becomes some great leader who we admire. When we exalt fellow influencers, we try to dress like them, talk like them, pray like them, tell jokes like them, achieve like them. This is dangerous. By emulating them, we hope to someday maybe become like them. I don't believe this ever works, and it's a painful side effect is that deep down, we end up feeling like a cheap knockoff.
By faith, Noah, after he was warned about what was not yet seen and motivated by godly fear, built an ark to deliver his family. By faith, he condemned the world and became an heir of the righteousness that comes by faith. How much time have you spent really thinking about what he did? He built a boat by hand that was well over a football field long on dry land.
Imagine the faith it required, the perseverance. There must have been days he wanted to quit.
Thank you. Did you guys study Noah in small group?
Yeah.
Can you imagine how mean his neighbors were to him? But Jesus tells us to love them anyway.
By faith, Abraham, when he was called, obeyed and went out to a place where he was going to receive an inheritance.
Abraham's faith is indicated by his obedience. But Abraham didn't just obey. He obeyed immediately. How do you respond when the Lord gives you a command? Do you respond as Abraham did?
By faith, Abraham, when he was tested, offered up Isaac. He received the promises, and he was offering his unique son, the one it had been said about, "Your seed will be traced through Isaac." Even though God's command went against everything Abraham knew and felt, he obeyed. What a moment of anguish for a father and a son.
What does Abraham's example stir in you? What kind of faith and obedience are you being called to today?
Why don't you invite that boy to play with you?
I'm sorry, I can't.
Do you remember what you talked about at church this week?
Abraham obeyed God even when it was hard.
Do you think you should obey God or obey Thomas?
By faith, he left Egypt behind, not being afraid of the king's anger. For Moses persevered as one who sees him who is invisible. How often do we lose sight of God and his promises because of our circumstances? How can you maintain your attention on the reward?
Okay, kids, say goodnight to Daddy.
Goodnight, Dad. Love you.
Ugga mugga.
Ugga bugga.
Brush your teeth. Night, Daddy. I miss you so much.
Miss you too, sweetie.
See you in a few days. What?
There's been a few developments.
No, Greg.
It means, I don't know, they say 3 months.
No.
So six.
Greg, no.
I'm so sorry.
By faith, he condemned the world and became an heir of the righteousness that comes by faith. By faith, Abraham, when he was called, obeyed. He went out, not knowing where he was going. By faith, Abraham, when he was tested, offered up Isaac. He received the promises, and he was offering his unique son. By faith, he left Egypt behind, not being afraid of the king's anger. For Moses persevered as one who sees him who is invisible. How often do we lose sight of God and his promises because of our circumstances? How can you maintain your attention on the reward? What is in you will come out. So let the word dwell in you.
Well, we've known each other for a while, had the chance to interact a few times, and I'm always think people need to hear your story. So tell us a little bit about your background, but let's particularly focus on how you started Blueprint and how you got there. Go ahead, okay. Tell us a little bit.
Well, wasn't raised in the church, came to know the Lord in college, actually. Was so far behind, talking to friends. People were talking about David and Goliath, Samson and Delilah. I was like, who are these people? You know, and so I just felt like I needed to catch up. I was a football player. My dad played pro football, and it just really had me to start thinking about I need to catch up. So it was in that process that I started going to different Bible studies and different things. From that, I started realizing that there wasn't a group of people that either I was around a group of people who had a strong commitment to theology, but they didn't understand my context, or a strong commitment to the context, but didn't have a strong grip on theology. And so it was really out of that that this birthed in me a desire to do something that was both culturally relevant and doctrinally sound.
But I've been told you can't do those things together, but we're going to get to that. No, oh, no, you can't do that. Okay. It's not allowed.
Yes, they haven't told us.
I get letters saying that still. But anyway, go ahead. Keep going. So
that birthed into a college ministry. Okay. You know, in which, you know, early on, like my brother Sho Baraka and Lecrae and all that came to know the Lord in that ministry. And it is from that.
And Sho Baraka and Lecrae both been on this show. But keep going.
Yeah. Well, that's good. You got good guests.
No. Now we have good guests. No. Until now. Okay. But now it's maxing out.
Yeah. That's good. That became a college ministry. That college ministry became a church. That church was in Denton, Texas, which is not your urban hood environment.
Sure.
You know, but what was interesting about people from all across the country was like, we want this because we don't have anything like this. And then we was just like, well, we need to help spark a movement of embracing kind of what's going on in America, the urbanization, you know, where there's density and diversity. And so we was like, you know, on December 15th of 2007, we just said, we want a group of us, let's make a commitment. And 25 of us made a commitment to move to Atlanta, Georgia to start Blueprint
All
Church.
From DFW, moving into Atlanta together to start Blueprint. We're in Atlanta.
Yeah, so we're in the heart. We're in the old 4th Ward in Atlanta. Yeah. So I'm literally, when I open the door of my house, I look across the street and I see the birthplace of Martin Luther King. Mm-hmm. You know, and so we're right in the heart of the old 4th Ward, the closest neighborhood downtown. It's the largest Section 8 housing in all of the Southeast, but it also has the largest in all of Georgia live, work, play environment, 2.1 million square feet of renovation that's taking place. So you have gentrified and kind of indigenous coming together, you know, right there. And so, I mean, I feel like I was made for, you know, this city, this neighborhood specifically.
Awesome. I want to talk more about that, but I want you to talk to us about, so then you launched this network from Blueprint Church. Talk about the network.
So basically a big part of the impetus of the 25, which eventually became 40, that move to Atlanta was because we wanted to embrace the beauty and the complexity and the density and diversity of the city.
And you're defining urban as dense and diverse.
Dense and diverse.
Right, which is,
yeah. And it was really embracing the beauty and the complexity of that and saying, how do we help others start movements across the country? And so we really went there to plant Blueprint, which the definition of a blueprint is a plan or a process that's used as a guide to start something new, to launch Rebuild, to help other churches do that. And so we've been doing that since 2011. We kind of launched in both simultaneous. Blueprint started in 2010, Rebuild started 2011. And we've been a part of overseeing over 40 churches planted in different urban environments across the U.S.
What will happen when we have churches that really let the word of Christ dwell in them richly? What will happen when we have teenagers and children who really let the word of Christ dwell in them richly? We think marriages are going to be healthy. We think churches are going to be transformed, that communities are going to be impacted as Christians start to obey the text in their context, in their setting.
You think about the Bible. The Bible is the revelation of God. In fact, John says that it is the revelation of Jesus Christ. If we are to know God, then we must know him through the Bible. Explore the Bible will help us to do that.
So the heart behind Explore the Bible really is Colossians 3, 15 and 16. Let the peace of Christ control your hearts. Verse 16 is let the word of Christ dwell among you richly. So we want to say, hey, churches, church leaders, pastors, do you want a congregation? Do you want a small group? Do you want a Sunday school class filled with people that speak to one another in wisdom, that encourage each other, that admonish one another, that are filled with gratitude in their hearts to God, that they sing and they celebrate the salvation that God's given them? Do you want a group of people like that? Then you have to let the word of Christ dwell among them richly.
The exploration of the Bible, book by book, for groups of all ages, from senior adults, to young adults, to students, to kids of all ages. If everyone is studying the same passage, imagine the possibility of revival based upon the study together in community as a group, studying the text in its context. Imagine the possibility of letting the word of Christ dwell in you richly.
Whenever we're squeezed, whenever people in our groups or in our churches are squeezed, whatever's in them is going to come out. If the word of Christ is deeply in them, then that's what's going to come. They're going to speak to one another with wisdom. They're going to sing songs to God. They're going to be filled with gratitude. What's in you is going to come out of you. And so we want to do everything we can to help churches and help small groups and Sunday school classes get the word of Christ deeply, richly in the people.
Welcome back. Our guest today on The Exchange is Dehati Lewis. He's an Atlanta-based pastor and church planner. We're going to jump back into the conversation with Ed and Dehati in a minute, but first, let's hear from Eric Geiger about the importance of small groups in this new series provided to us by The Gospel Project.
Hey, my name is Eric Geiger, and I'm one of the vice presidents at Lifeway Christian Resources. And we're going to talk for the next couple of moments about the gospel and its impact on groups, small groups, Sunday school classes, adult Bible fellowships, whatever nomenclature you use, the impact of the gospel on those groups in our church. Now, some may ask, does the gospel have any impact on our groups? Should the gospel have impact on our groups? Or is it possible in my church that I can believe the gospel, preach the gospel from the stage in our weekend worship services, have the good news of Jesus, the gospel as our doctrinal statement, and then have groups over here? Do these really need to be connected? And absolutely, they must be connected. The good news of Jesus, that he gives us freely his righteousness in exchange for our sin through his death for us on the cross, this must be applied to our groups. There must be deep connection between the gospel and our groups. If there's not, well, a couple of things are going to happen. One, we're going to have groups of people, Sunday school classes, small groups, whatever they're called, in our churches, form community on something less than the gospel. They're going to form community on something that changes, on something that is shallow, on something that is temporary, on something that won't last forever. And so sadly, if we have the gospel and then we have groups and they're not connected, we'll have a lot of groups and Sunday school classes in our churches that really have shallow community. Because community is only as strong as whatever it's built upon. And nothing is as solid of a foundation. It's of chief importance as the gospel of Jesus. We have to view these two as connected because really only Jesus transforms. Only Jesus has the power to change the human heart. And if we have groups over here and the gospel over here, we're not going to see transformation take place in our groups. So let me talk to you about groups in your church, and I'm going to give you real quickly a snapshot of two really massive research projects that I was a part of, and what you're going to see is how the gospel really comes to bear on these research projects, on how we do discipleship in our churches, and how we offer groups in our churches. So the two research projects were transformational discipleship, and then also a big research project on groups that turned into a book called Transformational Groups. And so here's what we found in transformational discipleship, and then I'm going to make the connection over to groups as you think about the gospel and groups in your church. So the snapshot from transformational discipleship is this. Hundreds and hundreds of interviews with people, also looking at the scripture and how do we grow? How does God mature us and how does God grow us? And what we learned, and this isn't like a purpose statement that hangs on a wall in a church, it's really a way for us as leaders to think about how people mature and develop. What we learned after all of these interviews is people really mature and grow as the truth of the gospel is applied to their hearts while they're in a teachable posture, and it's applied to their hearts by godly, incredible leaders who they love and respect. So think even about seasons of growth in your life. It's when all three of these come together. And so there's people in your church this weekend and this week that are going to hear the same message as someone else who's hearing the message and being transformed, but they're showing up in a small group or they're showing up in a weekend worship service and they're not in a posture that is open for the Lord to really move and change their hearts.
Well, you've talked about discipleship being more than just a class, more than just mentoring, but some sort of like community.
Yeah.
I know the answer to this question, but tell us how you do that personally in your home and in your church.
Well, I think we got to start with the overarching philosophy of discipleship, and I think it's rooted in Christ. We got to first recognize that Jesus was the only person that had the fullness of the Spirit, that had all the gifts of the Spirit. For the rest of us, there's no one individual that had the fullness of the Spirit. Paul puts it like this. He says the manifold wisdom is in the local church.
That's right.
So we start with the underlying philosophy that everything he has done, not I must do, but everything he has done, we must do. You know, because if I try to go simply do what Jesus did, then I'm going to create many me's of me that are lopsided, that are not holistic, that have the fullness of the Spirit. And so we create, you know, this idea of understanding that the old African proverb that says that if it takes a village to raise a child, it takes a church to raise a Christian. Mm. And really, we come with that underlying philosophy of that it takes a church of responsibility, because we talk about many people run their churches more like orphanages than family. And family is where you have a sense of responsibility one for another, you know, and sociologists are even saying that the sibling relationship is just as important, if not more important, than the maternal in determining how our kid's going to turn out. Mm. And so really what we are trying to bring back, what we have been running from, the sense of responsibility that we have for our brother since the Cain and Abel, you know, and says, am I my brother's keeper? You know, we've been running from that responsibility, you know, but it is very important that we recapture that. And so we just really have created a culture of a family-like environment. And, you know, and so one of the things that we talk about important, that we think is important, is how do we recapture the home? How do we recapture hospitality? Mm-hmm. You know, in the local church, because hospitality is where you welcome the stranger, where you welcome the brother, you know, and so that's the whole heartbeat behind. And so part of what we really talk about doing is how do we use our house as a weapon for the gospel, you know, and being able to welcome in individuals. So we're very intentional about using. So I've been married for 14 years, 11 out of those 14 years, we've always had someone living in our home. We've always invited. We have a rhythm where we bring college students in the summertime, and they're in for a certain period of time. And then we have people living in our home. And so at the beginning, people was like, how are you trying to start a cult? You know, that's the kind of, those
are questions. I wasn't sure if I could actually ask that question, wondering if I could,
So that's the earlier question.
So the answer is no.
No.
But if you were a cult, would you tell them?
No.
No, it would be a secret anyway.
So, but now people see it. And so if you look at our membership now, I would say over half of our membership have people living in their homes. Mm-hmm. And that's just something that we don't teach on it. We just model it.
Yeah.
We just model. And that's really the heartbeat behind it. And really trying to emphasize this idea of life on life.
Yeah.
You know, if you just study, like, let's look at the book of Matthew. You know, God was supernatural. The Father was with Jesus. Jesus, when he says, come and follow me, and I'll make you fishers of men, he will be with his disciples. Then he says, the harvest is plentiful, but the labor's of you. Go into the harvest. Yeah. And he's calling us as disciples to be with the harvest. Yeah. Then there's something about being present, because in context, laborers, he says, there were sheep without shepherds. And shepherds are primarily known with being with the sheep. And I think a lot of times we miss it with the big event-oriented stuff that we do. Mm-hmm. And we think about everything is so impersonal versus kind of the personal touch that we see all throughout the scriptures.
Okay, so you engaging relationally, engaging in discipleship. You tend to have, your church has a reputation also, you know, you mentioned your brother, for engaging in the arts, hip-hop, things of that sort. Where did that come from?
Part of it is just being connected to culture.
Yeah.
And living life. I think we create this huge dichotomy between, you know, kind of our Christianity and what we do, you know, every day. And what we talk about, our mission statement is to unleash healthy people to do ministry where life exists. Mm. So for many times, we're discipling the people who come to us. And so like Lecrae early on in our show, we didn't have to teach them how to do hip hop.
I don't know who Lecrae is. Yeah.
But we didn't have to teach them how to do hip hop. Yeah. We didn't have to teach show how, that's where they were from. We just went to like, what's the Bible? What does the Bible say? And they naturally take what they are and they put it creatively into the craft of which naturally of who they are.
Both you mentioned are quite effective and successful.
And I think that's the tension. So it's not go try to find people and turn them into rappers.
Right.
Because I think authenticity is the apologetic of our day. People want real, to be real, but it's really allowing people to use their God-given kind of story and use that as a platform. Everybody has a platform, and you got to teach people how to leverage their platform for the sake and the glory of Christ.
You talk a lot about engaging culture in different forms. You say that. So what does it look like? You've talked about deeply rooted community and family. You've talked about disciple making. What's it look like on Sunday, on the weekend gathering at your church?
Yeah. Well, Sunday is a unique thing. I mean, one of the things that we really fight against is we're not going to play, you know, try to placate to everybody's, you know, because you try to hit everybody, you miss it. You
just miss defend everybody.
You defend everybody. Yeah. It's sort of, I kind of remind myself of, it's sort of like with, you know, I'm married with six kids. My wife and I have six kids. It's like trying to get everyone's favorite meal every night at dinner. You're just not going to do it. Someone, even if everybody likes the meal, someone's going to have a problem with that for that time. And so what we just say is, listen, at the end of the day, this is just a catalyst so that we can come. We want to make it about Christ. Mm-hmm. You know, and so for even us, we do team teaching.
Yeah.
We say, so the only superstar, the only person that we're making this, we're building this thing around is him.
Yeah.
And we want to come. And so, well, but, you know, so what that looks like fleshed out, We'll do CCM, but then we'll do gospel.
CCM, contemporary Christian music.
Yeah, contemporary
gospel,
Christian
more
music,
traditional.
Gospel.
Yeah.
You know, but honestly, we really talk about creating a new sound.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're actually about to come out with an album.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, coming out soon, and just doing things like that. Just saying, you know, what is naturally that comes from within our hearts and with our soul. And I think authenticity is more of what we push than anything else, relationship, and God and his word.
It's a good word. Okay, last thing. I want you to talk to the pastors and church leaders who watch The Exchange, and I want you to tell them, you've talked about urban, dense and diversity. Most of the people statistically in America now live more and more in a city, not necessarily the level of urban that we might describe it. But the reality is that future is coming.
Yeah.
What should they think and what should they do in light of the coming urban, you're already here, but also the continuing coming urban reality?
Yeah. I think the reality is urban is upon us. And whether you live currently in the center city or whether you live in the suburb right now, I mean, most sociologists basically tell us that, you know, urbanization is going to come about through the impact of gentrification taking place. And as we're relocating the poor, urban is coming to our area. I really believe that we need to move from an ethnic missiology to a neighbor missiology. I think that we need to overcome our fear and really reach out to our neighbors that no longer look like you, talk like you, and act like you. You know, and I think one of the things I want to encourage you with is in Joshua chapter 1, after the generation before were unwilling to go into the land, the first thing that God told to Joshua was, be strong and courageous. Be strong and courageous. Remember, be strong and courageous. Three times he said, in the same way I was with Moses, I'll be with you. You know, and I think the it's not that fear is a bad thing. Fear is a great place to tell you where you are, but it's a terrible thing to help you make decisions. And so I just really want to encourage you to overcome your fears by putting greater faith and confidence in the one who controls all things, and that's the person and work of Jesus.
Now, for resources mentioned in today's show, be sure to visit edstetzer.com. And as always, you can check out some past episodes while you're there. Thanks so much for joining us. We hope you have a great week.
Thanks for joining Ed Stetzer and his team for this week's radio edition of The Exchange. Hear this and other past broadcasts of The Exchange. Read up on the latest trends from Lifeway Research and insights and articles from Ed and his team by visiting edstetzer.com. The Exchange Radio has been presented by Lifeway Christian Resources in cooperation with Faith Radio and Northwestern Media.